Welcome back, Pubcast listeners. This is the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. I am indeed your host, Tim Hunzi. If you want to know about Sync, then this is the episode for you. We have Courtney Kirkpatrick. She is the SVP of Sync at Concord Music Publishing. We cover everything from the licensing side, the specifics of what's in and out of the deals, to what you need to be looking at as far as being on the creative side. It's a really great episode full of a lot of wisdom. So sit back and enjoy the ride. Hey, welcome back, AIMP Pubcast listeners. This is your host, Tim Hunzi, and today I'm excited to be doing a Sync episode. I know I have not covered this in a while, and we have Miss Courtney Kirkpatrick here. She is now the SVP of Sync at Concord Music Publishing. Courtney, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Well, I love talking about Sync, mostly because I'm still, as many years doing this, kind of an idiot. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous, but I always like diving in and talking to you creatives in Sync because it's just a whole different world to me still. Yeah. But on that, why don't you just give for our guests who may not know you a little bit of background on yourself and get us up to speed on how you got here where you are now.
Yeah. So I am a Nashville native. I grew up in the city. I grew up around the music business and the writing community, and I think just that instilled in me like a love for writers and the craft pretty early on. I went to Belmont, as we do here.
A lot of people Nashville. Do.
And then I started interning for Big Yellow Dog Music when I was in college. And while I was interning, I expressed an interest in Sync. That was kind of an area that was exciting to me. It was something I always paid attention to in watching TV and movies. It was my favorite part of shows I loved was the music and the soundtracks. And I ended up finding a company that was doing a little bit of that. Because at the time in Nashville, there just weren't a lot of people focusing on it. So when I got over there, I ended up getting hired at the front desk, and Carla Wallace over there really let me just dive in and figure it out. She, gave me a lot of opportunity to learn that side of things, and nobody was really actively pitching the catalog for Sync there, and I was able to kind of explore that and try to find some opportunities there. So I was there for several years, and then I moved to L.A., started working for a company called Razor and Tie, which was a record label and publishing company. So I was working, on both sides there. And then in 2018, I moved back to Nashville, and Razor and Tie was acquired by Concord, which is how I ended up here. And I have been here ever since. Very lucky.
Give me your like one sentence pitch to a writer that doesn't know what Sync is. What's Sync?
What is Sync? Sync is the essentially licensing of your music to picture, the placement of your music to picture. So if there's a TV show, a film, a ad that wants to use music in their project, they have to license that, and they have to license what we call both sides. So you have to license the publishing and you have to license the master recording. You typically license the master from the record label and the composition from the publishers. So any music supervisor who is clearing music has to go to those rights holders and get permission to use the song. And part of that is negotiating the fee and the various rights that you need to put the song in whatever project that you are working on. And there's a lot of negotiation in that, and it is a wide range of fees and how music is used and how it's able to be used. And that's a huge part of what we do as well. My job is mainly creative, and we have a wonderful clearance and licensing team who handle a lot of that negotiating. My job is more focused on finding the opportunities, pitching the songs for the various, the various opportunities. But the two go hand in hand, and you have to know what a song will clear for in order to pitch it. You have to know any restrictions on the songs. Do certain writers have hang-ups about certain content? just things like that that you have to be aware of in the creative side as well.
So I'm curious, because I've seen some, so I'm speaking from a little bit of knowledge, but I have tried, you mentioned all this is negotiable, and sync forms, the licenses are really interesting to me, because yeah, not just because we've mentioned the fee that you get paid for, usually a blanket, or not a blanket, but you get paid a certain fee for the use, but then there's how much it gets used, when it gets used, all the media that's used. Could you maybe, as easily and basic as you can, kind of walk through the main points that you look at that are the main negotiated points in a sync contract? Because we do have a lot of indie people that listen, and sure, maybe help them get some basic knowledge of what's important to pay attention to in a license.
Sure. Well, you know, the first thing I think to pay attention to is what is it being cleared for? Is it an advertisement? Is it a trailer, TV show? All of those are going to have different terms to them. TV is easy. Everything is cleared kind of in perpetuity. It lives on, you know, it lives on a whatever streaming platform, whatever, for forever. Advertising, you're going to see, advertising gets a little more complicated. I think you see a lot of different territories you'll clear something for. You know, it could be a global campaign. It could be very regional. It could be for a broadcast. It could be online only. You see that also in trailers. Does it, you know, is this all media excluding theatrical, meaning it's not going to run in a movie theater, but it would run on your, you know, on your television? There's all these different things like that that are going to affect the fee.
So we've used some lingo. One of the things that comes up a lot when sometimes things are called what I've heard referred to as all in. And then sometimes you have like this master fee plus the publishing fee. Could you kind of tell us, like, what's the difference in those and what those mean for the writer and the publisher?
So an all-in fee means the total fee for the master and the publishing. So if something is $10,000 all-in, that means typically, which this, what's called MFN language, is also in all, sync licenses, meaning that you're going to pay the same amount of money to the publisher that you pay to the master rights holder. So, or in all the various publishers. So that would mean $5,000 to the publisher and then $5,000 to the master owner. So you can say it as like $5,000 aside or $10,000 all in.
Explain, when you say master, what are you referring to for those that may not?
Master recording. Yeah.
That's the SR, the sound recording,
sound
copyright.
Recording.
And then RIP, which is the songwriting copyright, would be the other side of that. What is important to know when you are sending a song to a music supervisor, an ad agency, or a film company? Like, what is important for them to know when they're sending that makes this easy for them?
Yeah, definitely having all of your splits figured out, all of the splits, and who controls all of those shares. Are the other writers signed to publishers? Are they independent? Do they have somebody that can clear their shares? Because, you know, a music supervisor needs to be able to clear things very quickly, typically, and they don't need to be chasing, you know, trying to find every little share. They are very busy, and that takes a lot of time to hunt that down. So if you are sending the song, I think it's really important to make sure that you have all of those pieces figured out. Even if you're not the one that represents them, you at least can be the one that tells the supervisor to go here's a contact for the shares, and have all of that information figured out is really, really important.
If you're a writer and you're interested in writing for film and TV, maybe give some advice on, like, what is the difference? Because we know we live in songwriter town here in Nashville, yeah, Tennessee, that we're both in, but so we understand writing for radio, writing for artists, but what is a little bits of the difference if they're writing for film and TV? What's some advice you would give somebody that's trying to get into that space? And what are some things to look at that are a little bit different than what we do in our world?
Well, the first piece of advice is to watch TV. Watch TV, watch commercials, like, don't fast forward through them, or, you know, maybe don't buy the premium subscription on whatever service. Just like watch the commercials, watch how the music is used. You know, it's everybody can do their own research. You know, that's exactly what we do on this team. You know, we're watching these shows, we're watching how the music is used, what is being used in what moments. And I think you really can see like what works and what doesn't. I think the biggest, you know, in terms of writing, it's really about, I don't know, sync isn't so much about the genre necessarily, depending on the you know, the show, but it's about the emotion and the mood that you're setting, you know, for a project in a, you know, in a TV show. I mean, music is there to help move the story along. It is secondary to what is going on screen. And I think so in terms of writing, you are trying to, in terms of lyrics, like writing from a broader perspective really works better to picture. If you get too specific with your lyrics, that's not going to make sense against picture typically. You know, if you have a song that's about driving down the coast of California and you're not actually doing that in the scene, then that doesn't make sense. And then if you are doing that in the scene, it could be a little cheesy, you know? So it's about keeping that a little more broad, really speaking to how something makes you feel versus a storytelling style of writing.
More on your side is the creative is, if somebody wanted to get into doing the work that you do, it feels like you have to have such a broad range of musical knowledge because you're not ever looking in, like you said, there's no real genre. It's all feel and emotion. And I've had and maybe you can define what this is. I've seen a lot of briefs in my day and like they'll always put references to the music and I have to look some up. I know a lot of them, like some of the music, but man, every now and again, I'm like, who even knew that song existed? Like, so maybe touch on what a brief is and how do you keep up and what are some things that you can do to improve that if somebody wants to get on your side of the business?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, every day we are receiving briefs from the various music supervisors that work on all of these different projects. And that's when they will reach out with specific music needs. So sometimes they're very specific and sometimes they're pretty vague. And you kind of have to interpret that. But the brief sometimes, you know, usually will say what the project is and kind of a general maybe overview of what it of storylines, if they're able to share that. Sometimes things are more confidential. And then they'll usually say, I'm looking for, you know, this kind of song. It needs to have a certain lyric. It needs to have like a certain kind of energy. They'll get as descriptive as they can. And then, yeah, sometimes they'll provide some reference tracks. And the reference tracks are helpful, but also, you know, I think part of our job is taking that and interpreting that and finding some other stuff that's not exactly like it because that song already exists, you know? So it's like finding something else that checks the boxes, that makes you feel the same way that reference track does or accomplishes what that reference track accomplishes, but, you know, with something from your catalog. And that's where, you know, where it's really important to really know and have a deep knowledge of the catalog that you represent. And know which writers can do that kind of thing and where to start searching for. I think that's what makes us really, hopefully, you know, valuable and what makes us good at our job is knowing where to look within the catalog too.
Okay, so Courtney, you've kind of mentioned like frontline and you've talked about catalog. And again, I love to define words and kind of explain to the listeners that what those are. Maybe touch on what those mean and how you approach each one of those in your daily process.
Yeah, so you can refer to catalog as like your whole repertoire as a whole. But, you know, when we say catalog and we're really kind of talking about you know, older, more recognizable songs in terms of sync. And, there are a lot of shows that are strictly using that. You know, they want their, maybe it's an era specific show. Maybe it's a show that is set in the 80s. And so they were only using 80s music. You know, that is, we invest a lot of time in really reimagining those catalogs, whether it's pitching the original masters or working on various covers of those songs and ways to just breathe new life into these catalogs. But when it comes to pitching for like something that's maybe era specific, I think it's also really important to not only know the songs, but also just know the context, you know, in which those songs were written. Knowing the history of the artists, I think is really important. That way, if I get a search that's like, we need songs from the, I don't know, the 60s that that were closely or like could be related to or speak to the civil rights movement, like what would have been something that would have been playing like in that era. Like those are things that we really like take note of and try to learn more and really understand just the history of the catalogs and what we're working with, and to really maintain, you know, that finding the most authentic uses for those songs. So there's that side of it. And then there's the frontline side of our job, which is really like our current active writer roster. So those are people they're currently signed to the company. They're writing on a regular basis. They are writing for specific briefs for us. You know, that is a big part of our business, is writing with sync in mind, being able to provide like specific opportunities for people to try to target. We do that in a number of ways, you know, in just kind of the day-to-day booking of the writers' calendars, but we host a lot of writing camps as well that we do alongside various music supervisors who come in to work with our writers. And those have proven to be really, really successful. We're really proud of them, and they've led to a lot of placements, a lot of great opportunities for the writers.
I love it. And I want to point out that y'all's sync camps are very well known in the industry. Oh. We all know the big sync week that you guys do and want to be on it, that are in that world or at least tangential to that space. You guys do an excellent job. It's really well branded. I think it's a great way to do
that. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course. I've been watching them for years because I'm sometimes jealous because I haven't had a writer in there, but you guys do a great job.
Work on that. Yeah.
So as we kind of come to wrapping this up, one of the things we didn't touch on, I think is important, is what should a songwriter or even maybe their publisher know before they even pitch a song for sync? Like, what should you have in your hands, or what do you need from them to make sure that this has the best opportunity to be successful?
Definitely the final mix of something, which we talked about, but also all of the assets that you can provide for us. So I will 99.9% of the time need an instrumental mix that accompanies the song. If it is a song that I would say, yeah, instrumental and an a cappella, if you can provide that as well. For trailers, I typically will also need full stems for the song. I wouldn't say it's necessary to print those for every song, but if you turn something in that your publisher or your rep thinks that they could pitch for trailers, then I think it's a good idea to go ahead and print those to just have on hand. That way, if a supervisor asks for them, then your rep can quickly send them. Yeah, having all of that stuff already done, it just increases your chances of something landing. You know, if a supervisor comes to me asking for an instrumental and then it takes me 5 days to get it from somebody, then the opportunity is probably going to be gone at that point. So having everything in hand on the front end before I even start pitching is ideal.
Don't forget lyric sheets. That's me as a publisher. I just want my rights on lyric sheets.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
Every Probably time I could clear. State
we
that.
We really do. We have to send them over as well when we're clearing something, especially for TV.
One last question in this little world here is, what do you think might be one of the single biggest mistakes that you see writers make when they're trying to write for sync?
Oh, that's a good question. This sounds obvious, but getting too close to a reference track. Again, I think that it's really easy to, when you have a reference track, especially for producers, I think it's really easy to zero in on very specifics of the song, you know, and I think as much as possible, try not to do that. I think kind of, again, zoom out and really try to pay attention to the overall vibe, the overall feeling of the reference and why that is working. What does the lyric do? What does it accomplish? Don't try to get too close to it. I think supervisors can hear it, or, you know, they can hear it. They can hear if something feels too manufactured, too written for sync. And I think we've worn that out at this point. Supervisors, I think, are craving authenticity and real artistry. So it's how do you marry your artistry with, with the formula, you know, for lack of a better word, that does exist with, you know, in songs that work for sync. So it's like how to do something a little different. Checking the boxes without getting too close.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi, producer Brandon Harrington, mixing and editing by Casey Porter. And this has been a Dime Collective production.